I left off the part about not seeing it on the little kids. That was too much to explain right now. So, what about me? He licked his lips and grinned. You see something? The longer I said nothing, the less he grinned. Do you? I sensed this would be a defining moment. Yes, on you, Megan, Jess, my mom, people I don't know, too. He sighed and rubbed his forehead hard. Owen, you need to go to the hospital. You got a hold of some bad crap, and it's seriously twisting your mind. I know, I thought that too. But then something happened this morning with my mom. I knew my story was growing even less believable, but I had to keep trying. He shifted his weight and sighed. And? I explained about seeing the chain cuff with the guy's name on it, and my mom's reaction when I asked her about him. I hoped Lance was about to help me put together some clues, throw out some possible explanations. Instead, he threw his hands up. So, you see chains on me, right now? I wanted to knock the smirk off his face, but at the same time, I understood it. He was barely waiting in the madness I'd been drowning in for 2 days. Yes, you have a shackle around your neck and 3 chains attached in the back. And I've got spooky tentacles coming out of my head. More like cords, but I can't see how many. You'd have to turn around. That did it. He gripped my shoulders. Owen, this is insane. I don't think he meant to squeeze me that hard. Did you hear what I said? I stood and pleaded my case. I see it, clear as day, and I hear it, too. And the name of my mom's chain cuff, there's nothing there. Nothing's hanging from my neck or poking out of anyone's head. He pointed to his reflection in the closet door mirror. See? I understand that you can't... He called me a name I don't feel like repeating. I sat back on my bed and slouched over, buried my face in my hands. Lance moved to the doorway and stared back at me. Look, man, I'm sorry, okay? Just get some help. I'll tell Coach you have a migraine or something. Let someone figure out what's wrong with you, all right? I couldn't hear his footsteps going down the stairs, just the grating racket of his chains. I watched out my window as he and Megan got in his Jeep and left. I leaned against the wall and slid to the floor. My fists balled so hard, my nails left marks in my skin. The closest guy friend I had in this worthless town didn't believe me. It was depressing, but it only hardened my resolve. I had to get to school in the morning and have that water tested. But how would I survive a crowd? What else would I see? Chapter 9. My mother stayed in her room all morning. I put some toast on a plate in the microwave for her. I wasn't trying to be thoughtful. I just missed my old routine. If I left in 5 minutes, I'd have enough time to give my sample to Ms. Barnett, then get back on my bike and off campus before the first period bell rang. I honestly didn't care any more about class attendance or schoolwork or track meets. No need to factor in time for picking up Jess. I figured she'd be at Emma Lancaster's funeral this morning anyway. Hopefully lots of people would. I wasn't happy the girl was dead, but I did like the idea of the hallways being less crowded. I promised myself I'd do what I had to this morning without overthinking it, without letting fear get the better of me. I just sat down on my motorcycle when a familiar, sickening sound sent quivers swimming through my body. The female jogger I blamed for triggering this whole psychotic upheaval was jogging past my house again. I was sure it was her. Like I'd ever forget that woman. I took heart. She still struck me as evil personified, but she didn't send me into a panicky whirlwind this time. I needed that boost of confidence. As soon as I turned onto the side street by my school, I could see protesters swarming, only this time there were chains and cords all over the place. My palms started to sweat. It felt like my throat was swelling shut. I pulled off the road and inhaled, long and slow. The weight of uncertainty sat like a boulder on my chest, but I couldn't turn back, not until I had some answers. A logical, reliable explanation, and hopefully a cure. I eased my way back onto the street, giving a thank-you wave to a driver who was nice enough to let me into the flow of traffic. Never mind that she had hardware gripping her neck. I tried to calm myself. They look like monsters, but they don't seem out to kill you. My body wasn't buying my pep talk. I was getting more lightheaded by the second. I managed to pull into a parking spot. That felt like a real accomplishment. So did peeling my fingers off the handlebars one by one. I clutched my backpack straps, my specimen bottle inside, then made up a mantra. Act like you don't see a thing. Get to Ms. Barnett. You can do this. Somebody slapped the back of my shoulder and about sent me into cardiac arrest. I pulled it together as fast as an unstable person can. It was one of my track buddies. "Hey, Walt." I slipped my helmet off, mumbling my mantra. "You're running in the meet today, right?" "Probably not." Okay, so I could carry on a conversation while surrounded by metal-clad humanity. Good to know. "Dude, Coach is gonna kill you." That was a very real concern of mine. "I'll talk to him," I said, even though I knew I'd be long gone before seventh period. I kept my eyes pasted to the pavement as Walt and I walked up the steps and into Horrorville, the foyer by the front office. The clashing of hundreds of chains dragging every which way overloaded my senses, and it was freezing. Walt eyed me. "Hey, you okay?" "I don't feel good, but I'll be fine." I tried to pull off a grin, but my cheeks were too cold. Why did my school feel like Antarctica? Walt didn't seem to notice. No one else did either. But I started to shiver. Walt gave me a jab on the arm and walked away, but not before I saw three chains attached to the shackle around his neck and four cords hanging from the back of his head. I dodged through the crowd with my face angled toward the door, stepping over countless chain links and cuffs before arriving at Ms. Barnett's classroom. She was talking with a student. I didn't like seeing my favorite teacher trapped in metal. I tried to be patient, but couldn't keep from fidgeting. "Hey, Owen." Ms. Barnett walked over to me, even though the student at her desk was mid-sentence. She looked me up and down, concern showing in her eyes. "Are you okay? You don't look good." Restlessness, a belly shiver, and ghastly sightings have a way of taking a toll on a person. "I'm all right," I lied, wiping my icy nose. "I have a favor to ask. Could you examine this for me?" I handed her the demon water. "Where'd you get it?" "A bucket in my backyard." It's embarrassing to admit, but I had a lifelong habit of lying to keep myself from looking stupid. No premeditation, just a knee-jerk reaction. I mean, what moron drinks from an old, unfiltered, not to mention dry, well? The backyard bucket seemed like a better explanation at the time. "My dog drank some, and now she's sick, acting off. I'm wondering if the water's contaminated. I figured since you're a chemistry teacher, naturally I'd be able to do that cool stuff like on CSI, right?" "Well, I was hoping you could run some lab tests and tell me if there's anything in it, toxins or something." She stared at the bottle, turning it back and forth. I counted three cords spiraling down through her curly brown hair. "I'll see what I can do, but I'm really swamped right now. So how long do you think it will take?" "I'm pretty sure I could have some results for you by Monday." 4 days? For all I knew, I'd be dead by then. "Could you do it sooner?" She gave me a tight-lipped, exasperated smile. Take your dog to the vet, Owen, and I'll let you know what I find. On Monday. I tried to look normal as I backed out of the classroom, but probably failed. The bell was about to ring, so the halls were almost empty. A welcome reprieve. I was nearly to an exit door when Principal Harding stopped me. Owen Edmonds, isn't your first period class that way? She pointed to the classrooms on the other side of the hall. Only two cords in her head. I knew better than to challenge her. I nodded, then walked that direction. My plan was to turn and get out of there as soon as she left me, but the problem was she never did. She opened my classroom door as the bell was ringing and winked at my teacher. Then she gave me a pat on the back, like she'd done me a favor. I was really irritated, but I gave in and sat at my desk. I'd leave right after class. I stared out the window so I could avoid making eye contact with Lance. The same three oak trees I saw every day remained anchored in the grass, leaves fluttering in the overcast drizzle. Gusts of wind shoved a smashed McDonald's sack aimlessly along the ground, and I actually felt sorry for it. I could relate. I craved a normal life more than food and oxygen combined. Jess's ex, Dan, started in on one of his dumb rants. Went on and on about how he'd shot the biggest hog in Texas and gutted it himself. Whatever. Out of habit, I looked over at Lance, but he turned away. I wanted things between him and me to go back to the way they had been, but I didn't know how to make it right. I couldn't apologize for what was happening to me. It took great restraint to keep from jumping out of my skin when the tall girl seated in front of me, Jess's friend, Ashlyn, kept leaning back, waving her blonde-streaked hair and both of her sharp-tip cords under my nose. I didn't have to look hard to see a word etched into one of them. Anxious. Then the other. Vain. Unbelievable. I was seeing things jutting out of people's heads that were labeled with, what? Troubled attitudes or something. Ashlyn was complaining to another girl that a guy named Spencer had used her. From the sound of it, she'd given him the one thing he wanted, and he'd given her the one thing she didn't want, a breakup text. Ashlyn had only one chain, and it was coiled on the floor less than an inch from my left shoe. I thought about dropping something on purpose as an excuse to take a closer look at the open cuff, but no one was paying attention to me, so I just leaned and stared. There it was, clear as day, inscribed on the outside, Spencer Robert Coulson. This had to be psychological. My brain projecting a first name I'd just heard, and using subconscious creativity to add a middle and last name. Maybe the name I'd seen on my mom's chain was some cosmic coincidence. My disturbed mind had drawn on repressed memories and pulled up a name. Hard to believe, but what other possibilities were there? The teacher was giving instructions for an upcoming book report. I typed Spencer Robert Coulson in the notes app on my cell. Just then, a putrid smell wafted in my direction. It reminded me of the stink that had invaded my room the night before last. I looked around, but no one else was reacting. The nauseating stench got stronger. I put my hand over my nose. The guy next to me gave me a "what's up" look. That second, my eyes darted to the closed door. I must have moaned or something, because several heads snapped in my direction. Believe me when I say this was beyond anything I could ever make up, toxified brain or not. Its feet were stained dark with filth and sludge, and its rotten toenails projected several inches past its three bony toes. Asymmetrical scraps of black, tattered fabric shrouded its form, and raveled just above its scrawny ankles. What looked like hip bones protruded beneath its slovenly garments, and its shoulder width seemed twice as wide as it should be. The thing was beyond emaciated, but somehow clinging to life. and nearly as tall as the ceiling. After the hideous being passed through the closed door, it stepped, yet also glided through the air as if riding on some hellacious conveyor belt. I clutched the sides of my desk and leaned back as far as I could, shoving my chair into the desk behind me. The thing jerked its mutilated bald head around and glared at me. It slithered closer and closer, seeming bent on murdering my soul. It was obvious that this vile being could not possibly have been born from a mother's womb. Its skin was thin and gray like cinderblock, eroding in spots. The smell of decay was unbearable. The creature began moving down the aisle on my left. It had to be at least 9 feet tall. I closed my eyes and tucked my chin in my chest, bracing myself for the assault. Seconds passed. Nothing happened. I heard unintelligible whispers and hesitantly raised my head. The thing had stopped just short of me. It was mumbling but not breathing. It seemed to have no need for air. I heard my teacher's voice. "Let's review the steps for constructing an A-plus book report. You guys do know what an A-plus is, don't you?" My classmates chuckled. "How? The most heinous creature of all time hovered in our midst, projecting fear into the atmosphere like ice-cold chemical pollution. How could they not feel it?" The creature stood motionless, peering down at Ashlyn. I forced myself to look up at its face, trying to make sense of its masculine jawline and feminine cheekbones. All of its features were disproportionate and out of whack. Its face was slashed all over, festering slices covering every square inch, and its parched lips were drawn back like a panting beast about to strike. Sweat dripped from its dirty chin. It didn't blink. Not once. Its clothing looked soiled and damp, and reeked of vomit and burnt flesh. I was desperate to escape, but didn't dare move. Suddenly, the thing dropped to the floor. I watched as it extended its left arm, placing its disjointed wrist into the open cuff at the end of Ashlyn's chain. Like the rest of the creature, its hand was scarred and grossly malformed. I held my breath as the cuff slammed closed. I shuddered at the ringing reverberation of metal on metal. I wanted to warn Ashlyn, but how? The creature stood upright again, hoisting the 2-ton chain off the ground like it didn't weigh anything. It glared with absolute hatred at Ashlyn, as if it despised the mere sight of her. Its movements suddenly became spastic and rushed. It leaned in over Ashlyn's head. With its cuffed arm raised, it used its other hand to draw her cords to its gnarled face. Like worms roused to life, the cords began squirming while the creature scanned them as if only a certain one would do. The monster finally chose a cord and extended its elongated fingers, beckoning. Then the cord slithered its way into the center of the creature's palm. Like a blood-sucking worm, the cord began to burrow into the bottom of the intruder's hand. The foul being rapidly pulsed its fingers, as if coaxing the cord to penetrate deeper into its wrist. I covered my mouth, repulsed by the slurping sound. Ashlyn's attacker raised its eyes and surveyed the room like a paranoid assassin. I felt like a coward, sitting there doing nothing. But how was I supposed to intervene? In the midst of the horror, my teacher had the nerve to call on me. "Owen, what's another composition mistake we want to avoid?" I dropped my hands from my mouth, but my jaw stayed wide open. I couldn't comprehend her question, much less answer it. All eyes were on me. I searched for any indication that anyone else could see the beast by my desk. My mind crashed. A cognitive Control-Alt-Delete. Nothing was firing. None of my classmates looked familiar. "Owen?" "Just say anything." I heard myself speak, the words bypassing my brain and slurring off my tongue. Well, that's true. We don't want to use random statements in our report that just take up space but carry no relevant purpose or description. How she miraculously assigned meaning to my mindless muttering, I'll never know. The corrupted figure raised both hands and began winding the chain and cord around its wrists, taking up the slack. It then jerked its arms into its hollow chest, and something dusty and shadowy jarred inside of Ashlyn. I could only see it for a second. The being continued mouthing something at her, an echoing whisper, and a hissing mumble that sent an electric chill down my spine. I couldn't understand its words, but I knew without a doubt that they were malicious. Ashlyn raised her hand and responded to a question, still totally unaware that she was being assaulted. Finally, a somewhat lucid thought. Take a picture. With the creature's back to me now, I grabbed my phone and pointed it at Ashlyn. But the creature didn't show up on my screen. Neither did Ashlyn's chain or cords. Through the lens of my cell camera, the world looked safe and innocent. Surely this was proof of my insanity. I was trapped in a mind trick, a torturous mirage. The bell rang and my heart skipped a beat. I fumbled with my phone and it crashed to the floor behind the giant's grimy heels. I let it lie there. Ashlyn stood and chatted with the girl across the aisle for a few moments, then made her way to the door. The living dead was still connected to her, one with her, making every move in sync with its prey. I wanted to tell her, but how could I make her believe me? I didn't believe me. They moved out of sight. There was no easy way to get up and walk away after witnessing that kind of horror. I felt nailed to my chair. I'd never believed in God, devils, angels, ghosts, goblins, or haunted houses. Surely there was a reasonable scientific explanation for what I'd just seen. Something was in that water, something hallucinogenic. That had to be it. Ms. Barnett would discover what it was, and then I'd be prescribed some sort of antidote and get my old life back. In the meantime, I had to get up. Second period students were pouring in. So were their chains. I grabbed my phone, then concentrated on putting one numb foot in front of the other. I entered the hallway with my head down. Someone called my name, Walt again. Owen, wanna go shoot hoops this weekend? Heard you are a star player at your old school. I nodded, giving zero thought to his question. Awesome. See you later, man. Where had Ashlyn and the huge creepy thing gone? I crossed the main hallway that cut through the center of the school, about to head for an exit, when I made the bold decision to look up. Bad idea. I froze in my tracks. Someone slammed into me from behind, but I didn't budge. There were a dozen of them, rag-clad giants moving among the flow of students. I couldn't take it. I sprinted out the door and threw the rein to my motorcycle. Someone called my name, but I didn't look back. I paid no attention to speed limits, red lights, or stop signs. Once home and barricaded in my room, I gave myself permission to break down. I yelled. I punched my pillow and threw things. I clawed at my face and neck and pounded the ice in my stomach. I have no idea how long that went on. I only know that what little sunlight there had been was gone when I began regaining some sense of control. I heard my mom say something about going out to eat, but I ignored her. I sat pressed into the back corner of my room, plucking strands of carpet and pushing them into a pile. After all of my analyzing, I'd arrived at one distressing question. I'm probably seeing evil that isn't there. But what if it is? And everyone else is blind to it. It was improbable, irrational, and, quite honestly, scary beyond comprehension. So I tried to dismiss it, and cling instead to the hope that my condition would soon be explained and remedied through medical science. My life depended on Ms. Barnett's results. Monday could not come fast enough. Chapter 10. The weekend was a blur of nerve-exploding nightmares and conflicting discoveries. A quick social media search confirmed that Spencer Coulson was a real person, a junior at my school, and he was definitely the guy Ashlyn had been talking about. Her status said she was in a relationship with him. His said single. For the life of me, I couldn't figure out how or why I was seeing names on cuffs, but now that I'd witnessed the chains used as monstrous torture tools, I was even more obsessed with making sense of it. Coach came to my house on Friday along with a school counselor. I thought they'd never quit knocking. Len sent me a text on Saturday afternoon. Heard Jess is going to prom with Dan. What's up? Maybe it was Lance's way of trying to smooth things over. Fine by me, but if I couldn't get him to believe me, our truce wouldn't last long. I was relieved to know I was off the hook for prom, but Dan? Why would she go back to her egotistical ex? Nice choice, Jess. It was Sunday night, and I was hanging my entire future on Ms. Barnett's explanation tomorrow of what parasite or poison was in that water. Around midnight, I left my bunker/bedroom and headed to the kitchen to fix a bowl of Apple Jacks. I did a double take when I saw the word guilty scribbled above the living room window. It hadn't been there the day before. The blizzard churned in my gut. On Monday morning, the sky was radiant blue. The first beautiful day in a long time. Maybe the scary things don't come out on sunny days. I'd obviously watched too many vampire movies. I drove by a convenience store, and right there in broad daylight was another one of the ghastly beings, linked to a guy just like I'd seen with Ashlyn. So they weren't confined to my school. Another bitter disappointment. I pulled over and stared at it. What are you? I couldn't explain its existence, much less identify its species, and I still didn't know for sure if it was real or a delusion. But I had to call it something. It didn't take long for me to decide on a name. Creeper. I pulled back onto the road and sighed. Did naming them mean I'd sunk to a deeper level of psychosis? I finally made it to Ms. Barnett's classroom, without hyperventilating, too. Hi, Owen. I've got some results for you. She headed toward me, hands in the pockets of her starched white lab coat. Great. It was the most enthusiasm I'd felt in a week. What did you find? Something toxic? Parasitic? Nope. The lab results indicate that this water is pure. It felt like my energy was draining out through my fingertips, taking my hope with it. Ms. Barnett said something about an excellent pH level and an abundance of minerals. Are you sure, Ms. Barnett? Did you check for rare contaminants? Well, I'm not the FBI, but I gave it a decent look. So the water is pure enough to drink? Appears so. She kept smiling. You're sure? I couldn't get past the denial. I've heard it said that right before you die, your whole life flashes before you. In that instant, that happened to me, only it was my future. I would never go to med school or be a doctor. Never travel to another continent, watch a game at Wrigley Field, or get married. Without a diagnosis and remedy, a normal life was out of the question. How is she, by the way? Ms. Barnett asked. Who? Your dog. She crossed her arms, stepping closer. What's going on, Owen? I knew better than to spill the facts. That had gotten me nowhere. But I did crave some guidance. Nothing in my life is adding up anymore. Everything is petrifying. She leaned toward me. I'd quit adding and start subtracting or multiplying. Find a new life formula, Owen. A shift in perspective. It's usually a good thing, a step on the path to maturity. She gave me a motherly hug, the kind that includes pats on the shoulder blade, but I left my arms at my sides. It was the most contact I'd had with a shackled person. I'm writing you a pass to go speak with a counselor. You can... No, I'll be fine. A second later, she handed me a pink counselor slip and the printout of the lab results, then walked beside me as I shuffled out of her classroom. I didn't thank her. What now? I had no plan B, no sensible next step or strategy. My feet walked without any directive from my brain, carrying me to my first period desk. I hadn't intended to go to class, but I had no idea where else to go. I stared at a random spot on the wall, unflinching, until Dan opened his big mouth. "I'm going to party all night with Jess after prom." I snapped out of my stupor and took a long look at him, past his sun-glossed brown hair and pretty boy face, to the bolted shackle around his neck. He had 8 cords jutting out of his head, skimming the back of his Abercrombie shirt, and 10 or so chains lay spiraled next to his expensive shoes. If I could have lifted one of those freezing suckers, I'd have strangled him with it. I let his comment go, for now. Ashlyn took her seat in front of me. She was alone, as in not escorting a creeper. She seemed fine, like nothing had happened. Our teacher passed around a sheet of paper and asked us to write the name of the book we'd selected for the upcoming book report. I wrote down the title someone else 4 names before me had picked. That's all I recall as of that class. The bell rang and I wandered into the hallway. I noticed more words written on walls in a few lockers, oppressive words like despair and anger. And there were droves of creepers among us. I could smell their nauseating odor even when they were out of sight. My freakish observations mixed with the mundane. Teachers piled a ton of makeup work on me. It was nearly impossible to concentrate, but I found it sort of comforting to make an effort to do schoolwork. A connection to my old life. Lunchtime came and I was actually glad to see my friends. I was adjusting to the fact that, as monstrous as they looked, people weren't trying to hurt me. I finally understood. They were prey, not predators. I grabbed a few things from the vending machines, then sat in my usual spot next to Walt and some other jocks, including Lance. He and I were polite, but hardly talked. Jess sat at my table between Megan and Ashlyn, ignoring me. I still wasn't sure what to do now that my toxic water theory had been debunked, but I forced myself to stay calm, pulling open my bag of Cheez-Its along the seam instead of ripping it into 1,000 pieces like I wanted to. I tried to go along with the table talk, but people hardly looked my way. Had Lance blabbed about me? I was down to my last cracker when I glanced across the cafeteria and saw a creeper closing in on a girl, swooping down like a vulture on a carcass. I watched it shrink to the floor, then hoist up again with a chain fastened to its wrist. Between spastic glances in every direction, it fumbled through her cords, then picked one. I could just sit there and do nothing, but that was getting old. I figured the worst that could happen is the creeper would kill me, and that would almost be a gift. My friends already thought I was crazy, so nothing to lose there. I took one last sip of my Powerade, then made the trek across the cafeteria, enduring the increasing drop in temperature as I got close to the assailant. I walked up to the girl, ignoring the creeper behind her back and her giggling, whispering friends. Freshman. Hey. I fought the instinct to run. She looked around, finally pointing to herself. I nodded, then reached out. She eased her hand toward mine, then held my hand about 5 seconds longer than normal. I'm Owen.
I know, she said.
A girl held up her phone and snapped our picture. More giggles.
I'm Riley.
She didn't sound certain of her name. The grotesque ritual was in progress. The creeper fluttered its fingers, enticing a cord stretching from Riley's head to burrow beneath its skin, sinking into its palm. Its garbled whisper sounded like an ensemble of anguished cries mixed with hissing. It gave me goosebumps. "I need to talk to you, Riley." She cast a wide-eyed glance at her equally wide-eyed friends. A girl prompted the others to get up and give us some privacy. Perfect. I lowered into the chair across from her. "Do you feel okay?" My tone was more fatherly than friendly.
Sure, yeah, I'm fine."
She grinned, showing a mouthful of braces. "You sure? Nothing tingling or aching?" She shook her head, narrowing her eyes in confusion. "I know we don't know each other, and this is going to sound crazy, but how could I explain? I'm wondering if you feel different than usual, maybe sort of an eerie sense?"
No.
My gaze drifted above Riley to the creeper's jacked-up face, and I zeroed in on the festering wound stretched across its forehead. I couldn't peel my eyes away. Riley squirmed in her seat. "What are you..." "Don't move." I tilted my head. What I had assumed were random gashes and scars on its face began taking shape in my mind, forming a word out of battered flesh. Hopeless. It looked like a brand, a deep burn on the creeper's decomposing forehead. Riley glanced over her shoulder. "Hey." I leaned in, both fists on the table. "Are you... have you been..." I swallowed hard. "Are you feeling hopeless right now?" As the word shot off my tongue, the creeper's head jerked in my direction, its threatening eyes targeting my face. I ducked down, almost wetting my pants. She shrugged her shoulders.
"I'm all right."
I leaned close enough to whisper. "Are you sure?" I knew I was making her uncomfortable, but under the circumstances, I didn't care. She slumped over and bit the side of her lip.
"I'm okay, I guess."
Even less convincing. "Riley, I know this sounds weird, but if you happen to start feeling hopeless today..." The creeper growled at me like a ravenous bear. "Please don't listen to those feelings. They're not coming from you. And they're not real. There's always hope." I needed to listen to the advice I was giving. "Promise me you won't give in to..." Did I dare say it a third time? "Sadness." No reaction from the creeper. "Promise?"
"I'll try."
She sounded like she was defeated already. Her smile now a drooping frown. She stood and crumpled her lunch sack, then stared at me, eyebrows raised. But I'd just given her all the advice I had. "See ya." I didn't know what else to say. I walked off, leaving her standing there, tethered to a hellion. But something inside me had changed. Without intending to, I'd taken Ms. Barnett's advice. I'd found a new formula. I still wanted help for myself, but at the same time, I wanted to give help to people like Riley. Time to quit obsessing over my sanity and switch gears, especially since I was more convinced than ever that what I was seeing was somehow real. Maybe another dimension intruding on ours. I was trapped in an evil mystery that had to be solved. For my sake, yes, but for everyone else, too. I wasn't carrying torture tools like they were. Surely that meant there was hope for them. I wouldn't stop until I found a way to intervene, to free them. But first, I had to get through seventh period. My coach called me into his office and gave me what can only be described as a bipolar lecture. First, he'd shout, launching white balls of spit at my face. Then he'd ask if I was all right. This up-and-down interrogation went on for most of the class period. I finally convinced him I'd been sick, which was basically true, and that I couldn't run in this week's track meet. It was our last one of the season, and we weren't going to win whether I ran or not, so he let me off the hook without too much grief. I'd always considered my coach one of the strongest men I knew, but his half-dozen chains ruined that. As I was leaving school, I saw Jess across the hall at her locker. She took a step toward me, but then stopped when Dan moved deliberately between us. Jess wrapped her arms around his neck, and he pulled her body to his. I turned and made my way toward the main exit doors, stomping my heels into the floor, squeezing my keys. Jess wasn't just dating Dan, she was flaunting it. I couldn't stand her flirting with him. More than jealous, I was worried about her. She'd told me stories about how he'd lost his temper with her, grabbed her so hard during an argument that he'd left a bruise on her arm. And now she was back with him? On top of that, right or wrong, I was beginning to measure people, okay, judge people, by the number of chains and cords they had. People like Dan and my mom had tons. People like Riley and Ms. Barnett had just a few. Jess was basically in the middle. I was out the door and almost to the parking lot when I did a double take, skidding to a halt. How was that even possible? Chapter 11. A girl with no shackle, or chains, or cords. And get this, she had a brilliant golden glow emanating from her feet onto the cement around her. It was mesmerizing, like nothing I'd ever seen before, but I guess that goes without saying. I followed as she moved toward the gym, her long blonde ponytail swishing back and forth. She looked to the side, and I recognized her. The girl who'd slammed into Jess last week. The same girl assigned to take me on a school tour my first day. I could almost remember her name. She lived in the neighborhood next to mine. I recalled her telling me that. I studied her as she bounced up to a friend and started talking her ear off, then disappeared with her behind the girls' locker room doors. I waited outside until a female coach ran me off. It came to me. Rayanne. I had to talk to her, uncover the secret behind her freedom. She was now my official Plan B. The harder I tried not to look at the accusation above my living room window, the more it consumed my attention. Guilty. I diverted my eyes to my cell phone, watching the minutes click by, anxious for evening to come so I could get on with my mission. It felt good, invigorating, really, to have a next step in mind. On social media, I found a picture of Rayanne Griner standing outside her house, and I planned to drive around her neighborhood until I located it. Ideally, I'd knock on her door around 7 o'clock before sunset, but after normal families ate dinner. For now, I sat on the sofa eating pizza rolls and watching mindless television, rubbing circles over my stomach. Nothing stopped the chill. The next thing I knew, my dog was growling, and it was dark outside. I opened my groggy eyes, 8:33 p.m. Later than I'd planned to head out, but not too late. I stretched. Quiet, girl. Daisy was on all fours making that inquisitive doggy face, nose aimed at the stairs. I stroked her head, but she didn't budge, just flared her gums. Maybe if the vet hadn't cleaned your teeth, you'd be a little more intimidating. I smiled for the first time, and I didn't know how long. I tried to pet her again, but she dodged my hand and started barking, loudly. The strip of fur along her back stood on edge. Hush, Daisy. I wasn't smiling anymore. She did this sometimes, but tonight it was freaking me out. Stop it. I heard chains banging around upstairs. Mom's getting up, that's all. As if I could reason with a dog. My mother's bedroom door collided with the wall, and Daisy ducked her head and ran to the side of the sofa. A blast of cold hit me, carrying a familiar rancid stench. I rolled over the back of the sofa and crouched down without taking my eyes off the staircase. It was normal for our stairs to creak now and then. It was not normal for the wood to sound like it was buckling under the weight of my petite mother. Daisy scurried behind the sofa, too, pressing against me, a low-pitched growl rumbling in her throat. Neither of us blinked. I saw my mom's bare feet coming down the stairs, then her silky robe, then her thin shoulders, then... Mom! It was the worst possible scenario. A creeper towered behind her back, advancing in stride with her. She looked like a dwarf shadowed by a dragon, entering the living room bound to it through a chain and cord. Behind you. I stood and pointed like a maniac. She looked over her shoulder the best she could, tipsy as usual, then glared at me. What's the matter? Daisy barked her head off. It's got you. Quit it, Owen, my mom slurred. She stumbled toward me, rubbing the sides of her head. Tell that dog to shut up. I backed away, nearly tripping over Daisy. Mom, there's a giant... It's a massive... What's gotten into you? She finally quit coming at me and leaned on the sofa, catching her balance before stretching to grab a wine glass off the coffee table. She peered into it. Clean enough. She headed for the kitchen. I had to try again. You're in trouble. She spun around, one eye narrower than the other. Excuse me? Her attacker was only a few feet away from me. I dropped my head back, all the way back. Are you the one who does this to my mother, makes her cry all the time? It didn't take any notice of me. It just kept gazing down at my mother's head like a witch tending her brew. Accuser. I didn't think, just read what I saw on its mutilated forehead. And when I did, the creeper squinted at me and opened its mouth so that its menacing rows of teeth jutted out. Then it lowered its big head and hissed in my face like a 2-ton cobra. I covered my head with both arms and, I admit it, screamed like a girl. What's wrong with you? My mom stared. I backed away, more like fell backward, cupping my nose, then talked so fast I couldn't catch my breath. I told you I've been seeing things, Mom, things people aren't supposed to see or can't see. I don't know, but it's horrible. It's evil. And I'm not trying to scare you, I'm really not, but Mom, there's a huge, awful, creeper thing attacking you right now. It's attached to you and it hates you. Hates all of us. Stop it, Owen. I followed her across the kitchen, talking louder as she rummaged through her liquor cabinet. I know it sounds like a lie or something made up, but please, Mom, I'm begging you, please believe me. I wouldn't lie about this. I wouldn't even know how to make this stuff up. She poured herself a glass of wine like we were chatting about the weather, then wandered back into the living room, shaking her head. Stop. I stepped in front of her and pointed. Do you see that, what it says above the window? I don't see anything. Owen, I need you to... Okay, fine, you can't see it, but someone, something, wrote on our wall. Guilty. It's right there. I need you to believe me. My cheeks were blazing hot. I know what this is, son. You do? The thought that she might have some answers for me was like a tourniquet for my hemorrhaging soul, even if it was coming from a creeper-bound person. I'm not an idiot. She took a sip of her drink, nearly spilling it. You're on something. Not this again. I walked an aimless circle around the coffee table, raking my fingers through my hair. I'm completely sober, Mom. I need your help. She sighed. Like the priest used to say, I can't help you until you confess. What a load of garbage. About the only thing I knew about my mom's childhood was that she hated being forced to go to Mass. That, and she ran away at 16 to escape from her abusive parents. My mom didn't respect the priesthood any more than I respected, well, her. But she was all I had. I'm telling the truth, Mom. She took another sip. Sure you are. That was it. I gave up and charged up the stairs, unwilling to be near accuser another second. But halfway there, I stopped and faced my mom, the words welling up inside me like lava. You're a lousy drunk, you know that? She winced and covered her mouth. The creeper nodded, twisting its lips into a sinister, satisfied grin. Chapter 12. I didn't like that I'd insulted my mother, and I really didn't like that it seemed to make that creeper happy. But I could only feel so bad about it. She'd had it coming. I'd missed my chance last night to go see Rayanne, but there was no way I'd let that happen today. There had to be a way to liberate people, and I was betting Rayanne held the key. As furious as I was with my mother, I'd free her if I could. And Jess and Lance and, if I knew how, all of humanity. Okay, maybe not Dan. The protesters didn't intimidate me today. Sure, it was irritating to be surrounded by a loud-mouthed mob of crazies, but compared to the creepers, they were houseflies. Even the deranged redhead, pesky but harmless. I was sick of walking through the school with my head down, like a puppy with its tail tucked between its legs. I kept my chin up today, dealing with the waves of anxiety as they came, all the while searching for Rayanne. The presence of creepers outside and inside the school not only gagged me, but kept me so cold I trembled all day. They were everywhere, drifting among us. Some crouched in dark corners. Others hovered in midair. Some actually crept up the walls and along the ceiling, like gigantic spiders, twisting their long, skinny necks to stare down on us while their torsos and legs stayed facing upward. I noticed they would gather around trash cans and inside stinky bathrooms. At home in filth, I supposed. People gave me a hard time for dressing like it was winter. Stella Murphy wouldn't shut up about it, so I flat out told her I'd wear shorts too if there weren't icy evil creatures everywhere. She laughed. I didn't. Between classes, I ran up and down the halls, looking for Rayanne, asking people if they'd seen her. Most didn't even know who she was. I tried getting Walt to sneak a copy of her schedule to me during his office aid period, but he was afraid of getting busted. Wish that was my biggest fear of the day. I now noticed more shackle-free students, a much-needed boost of encouragement for me. I didn't know any of them, but I caught up with one guy before fourth period. "Hey, I have to ask you something. You know, you glow." Yeah, that didn't go well. As for me, I didn't know what to make of my condition. No shackle, but no shine either. After school, I kept an eye on the girls' locker room doors, but never saw Rayanne. I was back to my original plan. I'd go to her house. Dan's fully loaded Ford F-150 was parked down the row from my bike. And there was Jess, hugging all over him. I couldn't get used to it. And today, Dan had a creeper attached to him. This particular one made me break out in a cold sweat. Ever seen a goat's eyes? That's what this creeper's pupils looked like. Solid black horizontal lines immersed in dark red. And its eyeballs were bulging out of their sockets. Its slimy, blackened tongue hung out past its chin and came to a sickening point, curling and contorting like it had a mind of its own. The four letters singed into its forehead were clear even from a distance. Lust. How fitting. "Just get away from him." I reached a hand out to her. As usual, Dan had an arrogant smirk. He pulled Jess's chin to keep her attention, and she actually let him. "You had your turn," he said. He didn't have the guts to look at me. "My turn?" Jess meant about as much to him as a Coke can. He'd use her up, then crush her and toss her in the trash heap, with the help of that obscene creeper, no doubt. But what could I do to convince her of that? I took the long way home to clear my head. It didn't work. I thought about getting into my mom's liquor cabinet, but no. Surely the only thing worse than seeing creepers was being drunk and seeing creepers, and honestly, just the smell of liquor had always nauseated me. Around 5 o'clock, I got a text from Jess. "Come outside." She was at the end of my driveway in a skirt so short even I was surprised. I walked up to her, and she grabbed my hands, giving me a spunky smile. Her way of trying to mend things, it seemed. "Take me to the bridge." I didn't know what bridge she was talking about, but I agreed to drive her. She slid onto my motorcycle and wrapped her arms around me, like old times. "Man, I want my old life back." We parked in front of a railroad bridge on a hilly back road that stretched over a river some 50 feet below. "This is where I go," she said, taking my hand, and leading me onto the bridge. "When I need to get away and think." We reached the center, and she stood back, away from the railing.
"What?"
I leaned on the metal rail and looked back at her. "Afraid of heights?" She cut her eyes like she was embarrassed.
"You know."
Then I remembered. Jess couldn't swim. She'd had her first asthma attack while taking lessons as a child, and refused to go near water ever since. I reached my hand out. "I'd never let you drown." I finally talked her into inching her way to me. Then we both stood there, taking in the awesome view, the kind of scene you'd expect to see on a puzzle box. I kept quiet, not to be stubborn, but because I couldn't possibly explain the latest events of my life, or what I knew was attached to her boyfriend. She broke the silence.
"I guess you heard I'm going to prom with Dan."
"Impressive choice."
"Well, what was I supposed to do? You don't want anything to do with me, and he's been begging me to get back with him."
I tried not to get so frustrated that I offended her before I'd made my point. "Have you forgotten, Jess, how mean he was to you?"
"He's on meds now. He's doing a lot better."
She pulled a ponytail holder off her wrist and tied her hair back. "You know his dad's a doctor, right?" I didn't know if she meant that as a jab, but it put me on the defense anyway.
"So what? Pills don't fix abusive."
She had to know I was right. Maybe that's why she changed the subject. "I get that you've been sick or whatever, but you never did explain why you ran away from me the other day, or what's been going on with you." Her tone was kind. She wrapped a pinky around mine, and that was all it took. My feelings for her came flooding back.
"Jess, I don't blame you for moving on. I just wish you'd rethink who you're moving on with. Dan is no good. He doesn't care about you."
"He told me that he's been out with lots of girls since we broke up, but it's different with me. He loves me."
"And you believe that?"
I looked into her face. "He's manipulating you." She sighed.
"I know what I'm doing, Owen. He's cared about me for a long time."
"Didn't you tell me he yelled at you so bad one time you had your worst asthma attack ever, ended up in the ER?
She kept her eyes down. "At least he hasn't rejected me."
I couldn't believe it. I was the bad guy now, and Dan was the knight in shining armor. She turned and walked the rest of the way down the bridge. I followed her.
"Jess, I was never going to dump you for that Cindy girl. And I'm sorry I ran from you the other day."
We made it to the end of the bridge, then she sat in the grass. I lowered myself beside her and tried to explain.
"I'm going through something really, really serious."
She eased onto her back in the grass, looking up at the clouds.
"Why won't you tell me about it?"
I lay next to her, stared at the clouds, too.
"I have to figure things out on my own.
Is there something I can do?" I turned onto my side and leaned on my elbow, my face inches from hers.
"You can stay away from Dan Bradford. She grinned.
You're jealous.
It's not funny, and I'm not jealous. I'm seriously worried about you.
I can take care of myself.
There she was,